Okay, let's get going. Is everybody surviving the winter outside?
Oh, yeah.
Unbelievable. Any latent questions anybody has? Okay. So for anybody under 30, does anybody under 30 know what this is? It's an iron lung. And what did it do? Why was there an iron lung? Help breathing? Yeah. Okay. Well, no, you're not under 30. I know. That's right. During the mid-50s, there was a disease called polio that caused paralysis. And if you got it really bad, you had to have something breathe for you. So they made these devices called iron lungs that was alternately pressurized to push and on your body to force air in and out of your lungs. And this particular model wrapped all the way around you from neck to toe, literally. And so polio was really bad. And I was a kid, you know, when that was going on. And it was a big fear, at least in parents, you know, that you'd have a ward of iron lungs like that. And this is a fake picture. It wasn't really like this. It wasn't really this bad, but it was a big fear that polio would cause this kind of disability. But luckily they came out with the polio vaccines and it wasn't quite that bad. And then so they made a chest version of this. So you only had to have your chest enclosed and they pumped air into it. And so this guy's reading ends polio threat. So it's a little bit too late for this guy, but so I don't know why they did that. But man, I remember, you know, getting those shots and sugar cubes and stuff like that. And so here's some more recent stories. On the left, a woman lives full life with an iron lung, but on the right, a Tennessee woman dies in iron lung after power failure. Now, those things are supposed to be on emergency power, you know, so I don't know what went wrong there. But just two stories about people in iron lungs. And another way of providing breathing is with what's called a pneumobelt. And this is a corset or girdle that you would wear that we would be hooked up to a source of air, a respirator here, and that would fill this bladder and press on the stomach below the lungs to force air out and in. And so a lot of people used systems like that, and that's certainly a lot less cumbersome than being immobile in an iron lung. Then there were guys like Ed Roberts, and he was a polio survivor, and he had a respirator, and he was able to just close his lips around the air hose in order to fill up his lungs and just open up his lips to let the air out. And so he did that for a long time, and he died maybe like 5 or 10 years ago. But he was a Berkeley guy, and he really started the disability movement up there. And he was the head of the California Department of Rehab Services for a while, and also very active in the independent living movement as well. So he was a major player in disability very early on. And another mechanism is what's called a rocking bed, and it's a bed that had a motor here, and it pivoted around this point, and so the whole bed, you know, rocked back and forth, and that was a way to provide. It would basically have the stomach push on the lungs, and in order to empty the lungs or fill the lungs, and this is a time lapse of how it worked. Yeah. So, it went at a breathing rate. You know, it wasn't super fast. But I remember a couple guys, who were residents at the VA hospital, and they both used rocking beds, and you go in there and you just see them, bobbing up and down, and that's how they lived, in the rocking bed. That's how they slept, Don't ask me how they ate or stuff, but it was pretty bad. So nowadays, if you have trouble breathing, they have this phrenic nerve stimulator, and the phrenic nerve is a nerve that operates the lungs. And so this is the external part, and there's an embedded part that actually hooks into the nerve, and these are the loops that interface through the skin to operate that. So this is the way that's done currently. Your phrenic nerve has to be intact, obviously. So if that's I don't know for sure. Yeah. That's right, and that was actually a problem we had at the VA, and because they had like two of them. So if they're, the strategy is if you rely on a piece of equipment, you better have two of them around. So, better have a backup. So that's that. So on Tuesday, next week will be the last week of lectures. On Tuesday, John Folio. From Stanford, will be talking about web accessibility. Not sure if he's going to limit himself to making websites accessible, or he's going to be talking about screen readers. Both are components of making the web accessible. And I sort of have another question. Somebody brought this up a couple weeks ago to me, and they were complaining. The iPhone, it's not accessible. That sort of, got me wondering, because, it is a programmable device, like a computer is a programmable device. A computer, would you say it was accessible? Well, maybe not the way it comes, from the store, but if you have the ability to put in accessibility applications, then it becomes accessible. And it seems to me it's the same thing with an iPhone or anything that you can program.
I have 101% vision. I use an iPhone all the time.
Yeah.
It reads out loud.
Right.
I think about voiceover. I don't see it's any different from my computer.
Now, is that an application that came with it, or did you have to download?
With it.
Yeah. But I think originally it was not included in it. The 3GS. So there was a point where that software wasn't available, and another point that there was.
I think
yeah. Right. Right. So, in my mind, anything that's programmable and you have access to it, can become accessible, despite the fact that it's made for able-bodied individuals. And then that's important because we want to have these devices that we all come to use and makes our life easier. We want to have them available for everybody. So having things accessible is a good thing, and even if it can't be designed that way, as long as it's programmable, you can make it accessible. But a lot of times you're working on a new design, and it may be something that's more mechanical. It would be good to consider accessibility issues at that time to make it universal design concepts. We talked about this before. Right. Well, I know the guy who did the accessibility stuff for PCs, and that started out in DOS, but it wasn't done by IBM. It was done by agency, the Trace Center in Madison, Wisconsin. So, and there was a lot of, even back then, there was a lot of DOS applications to blow up the screen and DOS screen readers and stuff like that. So, those things were available because it is a universally programmable computer. And they gave you access to that stuff. Okay, so that's Tuesday. And just for completeness, next Thursday we'll have a talk by Rich Mahoney of SRI, and he's going to be talking about medical applications of robots, and specifically things for folks who are elderly. So we'll get an update on that kind of stuff. But today, we're privileged to have Terry Adams here, and this is Terry's fourth appearance. She's been here every year, and it's always been really interesting. Terry is the Assistant Director of the Office of Accessible Education and the Student Disability Resource Center, you know, here at Stanford. And the center is committed to providing Stanford students with disabilities the support and services needed to allow them the opportunity to participate in Stanford life. And in addition to the academic accommodations, she also expedites housing assignments and facility requests related to disability. So let's welcome Terry Adams. Let me get your slides up and give you the microphone.
Sure. Thanks. Yep. Okay. I realized at some point in the last 24 hours that the title of my talk, the first part is informal, and that's really more how it's going to go because I can't really answer the subheading, except to say there's an ominous silence about durable medical equipment and where that fits in with healthcare reform. You don't hear the talking heads talking about that. And so what I'm going to talk about really is more about what the problems are that I have encountered and what I know to be the case. And I'd love it. There's probably going to be plenty of time for other people to tell horror stories of their own. With the underlying purpose of informing, although I don't know that there's many students here, but informing the conversation of people designing assistive technology. Even though it might crimp your creative style, thinking about who's going to pay for it ultimately. So this is the definition of durable medical equipment that I cribbed off the Medicare definition. And my impression is that most insurance, private insurance, uses this definition also. So you're really talking about stuff that's going to be used for a long period of time and that has some kind of direct relationship to an illness or a disability. And I bolded D is appropriate for use in the home because they use that to give you less than optimal equipment if you want to ever leave your home. Let's see, I'm pushing the wrong button. Here we go. So this is not meant to be an exhaustive list, just the kind of stuff that they, you know, most often, if you have a DME coordinator, which most insurance companies and HMOs have, this is the kind of stuff that they're supposed to be taking care of, and commodes and things like that as well. So going back to the D for use in the home, this is what they want to give you. It doesn't matter how old you are, what you do or what you want to do, they want to give you something like this when this is what I need. Or even better, something like this, no insurance company would ever pay for that. and here's the price tag. And this is the crux of what I want to talk about. Is I think the whole way that DME is set up is it's like the pharmaceutical industry. There's a built-in scam element. There's the price. There's the price that you pay as a retail customer. There's the price that the insurance company pays. You can't buy it yourself and get reimbursed. So you have to go through a Medicare or an insurance-approved vendor, and you have to pay retail. And then they don't want you to spend over a certain amount of money. So, yeah. Okay, so this item and spinlife.com, planetmobility.com, and 1-800-wheelchairs.com are all fairly comparable online vendors of wheelchairs, scooters, canes. I've used both SpinLife and 1-800-wheelchair.com very happily. They charge you what they say they're going to charge you. It comes really fast, much faster than if you order it through a vendor, and it's what it's supposed to be. So at SpinLife, this extremely underpowered, likely to tip over scooter is $649, including shipping, no sales tax in California. If I go to my local vendor, they're going to charge me $1,400 plus tax. And it will take weeks and weeks and weeks to get it. And first I'll have to have a doctor's prescription, and then they will say, no, you don't need that. And then I will say, yes, I do. And so you're looking at months, literally, to get something like this. So, and in Medicare, it's the same situation. So inherent in the system is paying twice as much for the same equipment. This chair in the corner, that's the last chair I had. It's got more power than the chair I'm using now, which is 2 years old now. When I got that chair in 2000, my insurance paid the whole thing. It was about $8,500 at the time. When I wanted to replace it after it was 7 years old, my insurance said, no, no, there's a $5,000 maximum. And I said, you paid for the last chair. Oh, no, couldn't have happened. So, but again, if you look at the prices, at Planet Mobility, this chair is $6,500. Again, no shipping, no sales tax. The list price is $8,500. And so not only would they not pay for the whole thing, even if I bought it myself, if I go through my insurance, I'm still out $3,000 or even $4,000 if I want the chair that really meets my needs most appropriately. The other thing that's built into the system is to automatically deny everybody the first crack all the time. So you need to be able and willing to fight for yourself, because my experience is that my doctors are not able, or either they don't have the wherewithal or they're discouraged from doing it. I'm not even sure, because I like my doctors, but they're just like, oh, I can't help you. And you're such a good self-advocate. And it's like, thank you so much. Here's my $35. And then the next step is, so I finally talked them into buying this wheelchair. I was only out of pocket for this wheelchair $450, but then a year later when I wanted to get front tires and wheel bearings, they said, no, you've had hip replacements now, and we know you can stand up, so you don't need a wheelchair anymore. So that was when my doctor said, oh, I can't help you. So after consulting with a couple of friends, I decided to send a nasty letter and include 8x10 glossies, pictures of my hands and feet. And amazingly, it turned them around right away. But then the vendor, it would be like going to Pep Boys or one of those auto parts places and having them say, no, we don't have tires. So, because there's nothing special about my tires. And I went to the vendor and they said, oh, we're out of tires. We have no tires. When are you getting them? We don't know. And it literally took a month to get front tires for my casters and wheel bearings. And when Ralph was talking about wheel bearings last week, I was like, are you kidding me? You don't have wheel bearings? So, and the whole thing, what else did I get? Oh, I got a new cushion. The bill was $900. At the very end of the year, I get a bill. Now, this has been approved, as far as I know. And that was in between the beginning of February to the end of March was how long it took. After it had been approved, after my appeal. In December, dated December 29th, I get a bill from the vendor for $450 because the billing got screwed up. They didn't get full payment. And I called them and I said, what are you talking about? And they said, well, we heard you had a Flex account, and we thought you might have some money left over. And I said, I just bought a pair of glasses with the money I had left over. I have no money for you. No money for you! And so they said, okay, never mind, huh? You know? And it was, it's just, it's amazing. It freaks me out. So the whole point of this is that if you're designing some way cool wheelchair or, you know, a cane that looks like a sword or, you know, something really, really cool, you need to figure out who is most likely to pay for it. And if it's unlikely that insurance or Medicare is going to pay for it, then it needs to be really affordable. You need to have a mechanism for getting it to the people and at an affordable price. I don't know. Yeah, that's it in terms of my slides. I didn't think you needed me to read you the slides. I think I'll leave it on there. I just like the idea of that. I saw another one. Oh, they had another picture of one of these. It was all covered with mud and stuff, like they'd been off-roading. Has anybody had a similar experience with trying to get their wheelchair either fixed or replaced? Yeah.
My brother has an hour chair, and he's lives in a silver. And he only required to provide him with a manual chair, which didn't give him any independence. And so I had to pay out of pocket for a power chair, $12,000.
Wow.
Wheelchairs at Berkeley.
Uh-huh.
I've been dealing with them, and I've had so far good experiences with them as far as
the joystick?
Not the joystick.
Oh.
The switch that goes into recline.
Oh. Well, if he's using it inside, yeah, you're not going to wear it out as fast. I commute every day from the train station across campus and back. So I'm doing, I don't know, probably a total of 5 or 6 miles a day. So just wears out, just like a car tire wears out. The battery thing is weird because I've had batteries last seemingly as long as 2 years, and I've had other batteries go after 6 months. And I think they have a 6-month warranty, and I've a couple times had them replaced under warranty at no cost because they just fail. And I had one guy, Antonio, Fiona knows Antonio, who tried to sell me this weird story about how, well, if I wasn't using the exact charger that they gave me at the time, it was some kind of polarity, and I was draining them when I was charging them, and it was like, come on! I did not just fall off the turnip truck. So, but I charge them every night, and they don't just fail like that. What they do is they stop holding a charge, so then you know. But it's a good example. It's essentially very similar to a car battery, and I feel like, is it $450 each now? It's astronomical. You don't pay that for a car battery. It's yet another ripoff. Yeah. That's good to know.
And it was exactly the same thing. Exactly the same thing.
West Green.
Or just, you know, in Green Shop.
Yeah, there are special batteries for wheelchairs. They're called deep cycle.
Yeah, that's what I have. Yeah.
So I believe you pay a premium for them, but not that much.
Well, you know, again, that's what the insurance company will pay, so that's what they charge. And I tend to have a sort of a pissy attitude about it, even though I could afford to pay $70 for, you know, each for two batteries myself. I want them to pay for it. I'm paying premiums. It's part of my employee benefit. I clearly need a wheelchair. They should pay. I feel that very strongly.
I have a couple of questions, and one is sort of with the current debate on healthcare. I'm wondering if there's room for improvement there. If it looks good, you know, for people like you. And the other thing that I hear of that's really sort of disturbing is. When politicians say, you know, we're going to cut spending, you know, who are they going to cut spending on? Who's that going to affect? And my first thought is it's going to affect people who, you know, really need money for wheelchairs and are disabled or homeless or whatever.
Yeah.
Do you have any thoughts on those issues?
Why, yes, I do, Dave. Well, I know, shocking. One of the first things that got me thinking about this was Dave was asking me, what are you going to talk on? And I was like, ah. And that was when healthcare was being debated, and it was in the nightly news, and I could see it going down and stalling out. And one of the things that had gotten me interested in Obama in the first place was Gary Karp, who spoke in Dave's class, I think, 2 winters ago, And he was the one that pointed me to the fact that Obama actually had a white paper on his website talking about disability issues. And he even had a point in there about the problem with this in-home use only policy in Medicare, which the insurance companies flocked to adopt, by the way. So it's not just if you're on Medicare, your insurance company, my insurance company, which is supposed to be good insurance, has that attitude as well. And so I was hopeful that if he was elected, that that agenda would not go by the wayside. I'm less hopeful now because I think that the political situation with the vendors and the makers of the durable medical equipment is very akin to the pharmaceutical industry. So as long as the system encourages paying twice as much, if not more, for the equipment, certainly they're going to try and say, we're not going to buy you that. It's too expensive. Nobody's addressing the fact that it's double what it should be costing in the first place because the lobby's too strong. And I don't know, I mean, that gets to systemic problems with our system. But I think there's a medicalization of the idea of durable medical equipment also going on a cultural level so that, I mean, you know, when I write these letters and I send my 8x10 glossies, I'm also saying, I'm only 52, I'm working full time, I don't just stay in my house, I don't just go out to play bingo or go to Caro's. I am paying taxes here. And there's no, and it's like, oh, really? Wow. You know, there's no cultural model for a fully employed, severely disabled person who needs the DME to fully participate in society. And if they have health insurance that they're paying for, or if there was a public option, that doesn't mean that it makes sense to cut that. I mean, so if I don't get my DME, then I'm forced to stop working, and now you have to pay me benefits. How does that make sense? The other thing that's interesting to me is, so this chair cost my insurance company $5,000, which took multiple appeals. When I had my latest hip surgery, my surgeon in the process of the surgery broke two of the prosthetics because he was having trouble making it fit. Each of the prosthetics that got broken cost $5,000. Nobody said anything about that.
And you had to pay for that?
No. No. Nobody, you know, that's just the cost of doing business. It's all skewed, I believe. And I don't know. I don't know what it'll take to change it. I mean, I think changing the way Congress is seemingly over-controlled by lobbyists, I don't know if it all... I think that it also will take another 40 years of people with disabilities more and more participating in every aspect of society. Change happens really, really slowly.
Well, since you're talking about change and being a baby boomer, and the boomers have proven I'm well at any stage, I can't imagine we're going to be wanting to sit in our houses with our durable medical equipment that doesn't let us go out the door. But I was thinking that was probably one of the reasons, aside from many, that our insurance, for example, cut the cost of what they give you for your share of that. They see the grain coming.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if they cut it even further. You know, and then all of a sudden, it's being cut.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, the boomers, unless they have a relative who has had a disability long term, they don't know that this is woefully inadequate for them. And they don't know that if you fight a little harder, you might get something better. And there's still the stigma about, now I'm disabled, you know, and, oh, I used to be able to do this. As Joan knows, I play bingo I live in a mobile home complex, and I play bingo, and a lot of the people are seniors. And I remember having this conversation with this lady who's in her 80s, and I said, oh, how you doing? And she said, well, I'm doing okay. I was making a fruit salad today, and it seemed like it took me forever, and I got so tired. And I said, do you sit down when you do it? I mean, I do almost all of my cooking sitting down. And she just looked at me like I was from another planet entirely. It had never occurred to her to do it that way. Yeah. I know, it's hideous. And there's no clear path. And a really good discussion of that in a very humorous vein is, I think it's the John Callahan autobiography, where he was starting to make money, real money, as a cartoonist, having been on SSI or SSDI, and getting all kinds of assistance with personal care attendants and stuff like that. And if he made over a certain amount, he's going to lose all his benefits, but it was not going to be enough to pay all of his expenses. And it's still a huge catch-22.
In the VA system, it's the same way. There's a huge disincentive to working. So my colleague over there has been volunteering for years and years, you know, working 6 hours a day and not getting any benefits. In order to retain
Right.
I was just it's similar to me on the Medicare treatment to be under the new health plan and so forth. It seems to be, seems to recall provisions about fraud and all the charges. I thought that might cover it. That was another complaint.
I had a question sort of based on that. I know that was that money that the insurance company paid, was that just for equipment or are there other expenses, for the doctor's visit?
You mean the $5,000 limit? No, the $5,000 limit is strictly for durable medical equipment. Everything else, copays, lab tests, my surgeries, that was all separate pot of money. And nobody ever batted an eye about that stuff. Oh, sure. I mean, if you have any kind of specialized need, you would need to see somebody about a seating system and all that kind of stuff. But the websites I mentioned and the equipment I bought online are, American brands. Quickie, I've bought two manual Quickie wheelchairs for around $300 each. And Quickie is an established brand. Yeah, and my pal Antonio, he tried to sell me, I bought a travel chair. I thought it was going to be a travel chair. It's actually a Fisher Price chair, and it sits in my dining room. But I paid essentially $1,400 for it online. It's an Invacare product, and he was going to give me a deal and only charge me $3,000 for it. Yeah, but his rap is that anything you buy online, it could be a Chinese knockoff. And, I'm thinking, well, if it's got the Quickie logo and it comes from Quickie, I don't think so. So, but yeah, you have to be an educated consumer.
You've got to have a team to make some of those decisions for you.
Yeah.
Why do people make things like that that consumers can't afford? Because the school could afford that, literally. I mean, how much does that cost?
They try to have the VA provide those as well. Very early on, when I was working at the VA, they flew me to Washington for one day.
You had to be able to you had to either have an assistant or be able to hold on to the rails, right, to go up the stairs. Never appealed to me. No, they don't.
That's where they made their mistake. They never started with the end user. So the first one they built, the seat height was up here. Now I'm a fairly functional quad, so I could climb into that seat. But if I had guy who did this with me, I said, well, we'll wait until the fourth iteration, and which never came. So they started out with a fairly brilliant idea, but if you don't bring on board people who are actually going to use them, then you have this great idea that, well, the first wheelchair I ever got, say, I was at Stanford, and the physiatrist, you know, he brought in all these chairs, and this one physiatrist, he's rolling around, he's just absolutely delighted. He said, oh, it'd be really great. If you just put a little lever right here, then you could use your foot to stop it. And there was dead silence in the room. Buy the same stuff for three times the amount of what I can find the exact thing online. It's just totally insane. There's those pieces, and I can say you've got no idea the system right now. So I've watched a change over 14 years between, oh, you need that? Yes. You do. You need that? You know, 8 years later? No. And then it's all the letters.
You have to have tenacity, too.
Absolutely. And most people don't. They hit the no the first time, they go, because they don't have knowledge to how to move it.
That's what they're counting on.
Well, yeah, exactly. It is what they're counting on.
They're counting on you going away.
Yeah.
I never knew.
Yeah.
Me either.
I've heard some stories where, you know, the doctor and the therapist would come up with, a 10-page justification for we'll give in and say, okay, we'll do it, but just this once, and you can't use this same argument the next time. You have to make a different argument. So, it's really, really tough. Reed, did you have a comment?
I was wondering, why is there such a price disparity between what you can buy online and then what your local vendor would sell you?
Why do I think there's a price disparity?
Yeah.
Because the vendor wants a big cut.
Well, and also why, so you have to go through your vendor to deal with insurance company. Why can't you use the online site and use that and go directly to your insurance company and says, look.
Because the insurance company says if your vendor, if you boil it down, it's that we don't trust you that if you send us a copy of an invoice saying you paid this for this chair, which you got a doctor's prescription for, we don't trust you, the consumer, to ask for appropriate and justified reimbursement. Therefore, and we don't trust your judgment if you picked that chair out. Even if I've gone to a vendor and gotten a wheelchair evaluation and we both agree this is what the chair I need. The system is set up so that the insurance and Medicare will only pay. They just changed this about a year ago because I remember my vendor telling me that there were a whole new set of hoops that vendors have to jump through now to be authorized vendors for Medicare. And so they've limited the system And so Medicare says only these vendors, and then the vendors can charge what they want.
There's been a lot of fraud, too. There's a lot of vendor fraud. You know, that they'll submit bills for prosthetic arms and stuff that aren't prescribed for anybody, and they'll just pocket the money. So it's pretty widespread.
But I think they can make a ton of money just going with the system. If you think about it, they're paying the $650 for the chair that they're selling me for, or selling the insurance company for $1,400. That's, you know, that's a 50% markup.
That's true, but I'm just kind of confused why the insurance companies wouldn't go and have the cheaper place to sell you. Is that they don't profit off of selling you the chair.
It's called corruption and graft.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering. That's in their Medicare.
It's in their regs.
I'm saying, why are these online sites not authorized Medicare retailers? I would assume that they would get so much more business if they were authorized retailers, giving them the opportunity to make more money.
It's
those
hoops. Huh?
You're trying to make sense of a system that is internally corrupt and irrational.
Wouldn't these online sites stand to gain substantial amounts of money because they offer it at a lower price, and it only if they just went through these hoops?
The door's been shut.
They can't. And they can't because they are not doing wheelchair evaluations.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
So that's part of the hoop that they can't jump through. Well, yes. No. I did that. He hasn't gotten back to me yet.
I like what you said earlier that manufacturers should look into a way of a payment plan, like, for example, car dealers. They have their financing department that gives the consumer a choice to either go through that manufacturer's financing department, you go to your credit union, you go to your bank. Okay? And I think the manufacturers are starting to see a much more wider competitiveness here. Because I'm finding that in the United States, a lot of the insurance only pay for U.S. marketed products. Now, there are other designs in other countries that are so much more viable and functional to a person that wants to move forward or not move forward. But again, I'm caught in a dilemma. Do I buy a foreign-made equipment which does not give me any kind of reimbursement whatsoever here? Alright? And secondly, the markup of that is only going to be through vendors that are not taking any other insurance but private insurance. So again, there's another out-of-pocket cost. So if the global market wants to bring a cricket here, which, you know, the wheelchair designs today are whistles and what have you. You know, I think that they need to start moving that if they're going to compete and want the competition, this is the market. So they should, they should start looking into some kind of other financing situation because these wheelchairs are going to be with us for at least 5-6 years. And some cars we don't even keep that long.
I know. But the other piece of that argument, and I agree that it makes sense to have choices. I would never argue against choices and options. But, you know, one of the key elements of this healthcare debate is there a right to adequate healthcare? A moral imperative to provide people with adequate health care? And if the answer is yes to that, for people with disabilities, adequate durable medical equipment is part of that. So why should you be out of pocket at all? That's my question. Yeah.
That the last one they had 8 consumers that attended this. Now they're bringing in droves of people that are going to come and speak and address exactly this issue during the next in a 4-day conference.
That's so cool. Yeah.
So the back that this came with, I had to keep. I have to store it because they're expecting it back when I turn this chair in. So it's
That's weird. I got my first power chair from Kaiser in the 90s, and they didn't have that policy then.
Oh, they do now.
Yeah, I know. That's why I bailed on Kaiser.
What are they going to do with the 5-year-old panel? I have no idea. They want it back, though.
It's the principle of the thing.
There's a graveyard somewhere.
Yeah.
Well, you know what it is? What they're doing is they're trying to cover is the people that get one and then turn around and sell it.
But how many people are there that do that? The what? Oh. Although I would argue that a percentage of those people are like a couple I saw, and it actually wasn't a couple, it was a brother and sister my age at Wheelchairs of San Mateo one time, and I was sitting there waiting for my chair, and they came in and they were, you know, talking and waiting for somebody to come talk to them, and I caught that the gist of it was they had an elderly father who was living in an assistive living place, and he needed a scooter or something like that just to go from his room to the dining room, and they were going to pay for it out of pocket, and I just wanted to take them outside and say, do not spend over $1,000 on this. Oh my God. And I'm sure that they spent at least $5,000 by the time Antonio got through with them. So then Dad dies 2 years later. They have spent $5,000 on this thing. They can't foresee any possible use for it. And that's what you see on Craigslist, too. I really think so. And my Fisher-Price chair will be on Craigslist someday, and I paid $1,400 for that. So, I mean, I agree with you, but there are also people that, yeah. Did somebody... No, I'm hallucinating.
So do you use your chair inside your house?
Well, I don't use this chair inside my house because, so I live in Sunnyvale, and the city of Sunnyvale has a really nice program. They will provide a lift or a ramp on your house if you meet the income guidelines, and I make... Unless I count my cats as dependents, I make too much money. And if I put a ramp or a lift on my house, it would cost somewhere between $5,000 to $7,000, even though I only have 5 steps. So because I can walk a little, and I was I'm going to get back to that in a second because of something Fernanda said last week. But because I can walk a little, I leave the chair in the driveway and I charge it down there and I go up the steps and I use a manual chair in my house because that's the most affordable thing I can do. If the insurance company knew, and I guess I'm going out on a limb here, if they knew for a fact that I did not use this chair in my house, they might try and take it away from me or refuse to have anything to do with it ever again. But the whole thing you said about people giving you a hard time when you're parking because they see you walking a little bit, one thing I became hyper aware of when I got my first power chair in the 90s was how many people I knew already that used power chairs that couldn't walk at all and actually could walk a little bit. You know, they could transfer, they could walk in their house a little bit. And it's another misconception that, you know, everybody that uses a chair either couldn't or shouldn't be able to walk at all. And if they can, they're malingering or something. I encountered that attitude actually when I worked at a law firm, and we had a case of a high school student at a high school in Oakland, and somebody from the Department of Special Ed in the Oakland High School District had gone to her house for some reason, and there were stairs, and she was obviously living up the stairs, and they could not conceive that the fact that she needed to use a chair at high school and the fact that she probably crawled or walked painfully up the stairs, that those two facts could not coexist, that she must be faking. Because what high school student doesn't want to use a wheelchair in high school? I mean, seriously. We won that case.
Could you say a little bit more about how that phrase, in-home use only, has gotten stuck in there? I mean, it's essentially discriminatory. I mean, you know, like, we only want to do the ones to go outside, so we'll give you this crappy chair you can use in the house, and if you want the beach wheelchair...
Tough nuggies, yeah. I don't know the history of who decided that was a really good idea, but by its nature, it's limiting. And certainly, if I'm in my 70s and now I have a mobility issue, but I can still drive, but I can't really get this scooter in and out of the house, and it's not really adequate. That person doesn't know that the best they can get is not adequate because they don't know what the possibilities are. So they're not going to fight it. And Medicare thinks they're saving money, even though if they could pay what they paid for the shitty scooter and get a nice power chair if the system wasn't so whacked out.
I'm swearing in
class. Oh. Damn!
I wasn't aware of that. Am I kidding?
It's poetry.
That's right. Happy trails, yeah.